I offer a reading this morning, Imperfection by Elizabeth Carlson. I am falling in love with my imperfections, the way I never get the sink really clean, forget to check my oil, lose my car in parking lots, miss appointments I have written down, I'm just a little late. I'm learning to love the small bumps on my face, the big bump of my nose, toes that overlap. Learning to love the open-ended mystery of not knowing why. I'm learning to fail, to make lists, use my time wisely, read the books I should. Instead, I practice inconsistency, irrationality, forgetfulness. Probably I should hang my clothes neatly in the closet, all the shirts together, then the pants, send Christmas cards, or better yet, a letter telling of my perfect family. But I'd rather waste time listening to the rain or lying underneath my cat, learning to purr. I used to fill every moment with something I could cross off later. Perfect was the laundry done and folded, all my papers graded, the whole truth and nothing but. Now the empty mind is what I seek, the formless shape, the strange, off-center, sometimes fictional me. Perhaps you know a variation on the story of a Buddhist priest long ago who had been put in charge of the garden of a large Zen temple. He had gained the job because of his love of flowers, shrubs, and trees, and he made it his mission to make that garden beautiful. Every day and without fail, the priest would go to work, raking the soil, pruning the plants, trimming the hedges, and cultivating the landscape. Now, next to the large temple was a smaller temple where there lived a very old Zen master. Often, when the priest was going about his garden tending, the master could be seen sitting nearby on the other side of a wall that separated the two temples, observing the care the priest was taking. One autumn day, the priest was expecting some very important guests to the temple, so he gave special attention to the garden. He pulled weeds, combed the moss for small twigs, cut the grass with extreme precision, and carefully raked the ground, meticulously arranging the dry fallen leaves into beautiful patterns. As he worked, he noticed that the old Zen master was watching him with great interest. When he had finished, the priest stood back to admire his work. "Isn't it beautiful?" he called out to the old master. "Yes," replied the old man, "but there is something missing. Help me over this wall, and I'll put it right for you." After hesitating, the priest lifted the old fellow over and set him down. Slowly, the master walked to a maple tree near the center of the garden, grabbed it by the trunk with both his arms, and shook it with all his strength. Auburn leaves showered down over the tidied garden. "There," said the old man, satisfied. "You can help me back now." The beauty of imperfection. In pointed contrast with Greco-Roman paeans to symmetry and perfection, Japanese aesthetics has developed wabi-sabi. Wabi, roughly translatable to the elegant beauty of humble simplicity, and sabi, referring to the passing of time and inevitable deterioration. Together, wabi-sabi celebrates the beauty in the incomplete, the impermanent, the imperfect. Wabi-sabi is characterized by an appreciation for the randomness of nature, a relaxed acceptance of change, a melancholy-tinged celebration of the off-kilter, the tumble-down, an emerging of human character with the majestic dignity of uncapturable nature. There is profound beauty in the dents and scratches of time's passage. On the cover of your orders of service this morning, note the quiet asymmetry in a cross-section of cut wood. The ordinarily light golden timber in the center rendered rich browns on both sides, the result of a parasite on the tree. The everyday rendered exceptional by unplanned vagaries of time. I find that while we can perhaps immediately appreciate the simple grandeur of a bent and gnarled tree seen starkly against the backdrop of a snow-capped mountain range, we have a much less immediate intuitive grasp of the indefinable splendor of our own bent and gnarly idiosyncrasies, or of those around us. And we're perhaps more readily apt to revere colors revealed in the cracks and crevices of a standing wall than we are to revel in the palette created by the frayed edges and fading hues of our own preserved particularities. Now, wabi-sabi is not an aesthetic of letting things fall into disrepair or a justification for laziness or surrender. One writer jokingly speaks of their 9-year-old who, when remonstrated for their unmade bed and the crumb-laden floor of their bedroom, responded with, "Oh, that, well, that's just wabi-sabi." Wabi-sabi is not found in shabbiness, uncleanliness, or the slovenly. The aesthetic does, however, invite us to pause in the relentless pursuit of perfection in what we accomplish, in what we own, and in who we are. To open a space in the wall of our hasty judgments, and to begin appreciating the so-called flaws, both in ourselves and in others, to acknowledge the impermanence of the world, and to marvel in the rough edges, the wrinkles, the vulnerabilities, the quirks, in the absolutely unique way that each person and object and creature brings the universe into beautiful, imperfect expression. Social work research professor Brené Brown had dedicated her career to studying difficult emotions like shame and fear, collecting thousands of stories from a diverse swath of humanity, and assessing the patterns, the reoccurring themes in those persons who, in the face of the daily stresses of work, family, and social pressures, embodied a resilience and an inner joy, who found a way to live what she began to call wholeheartedly. She had started to make two lists under provisional headings of do and don't to capture what she was seeing and hearing as present and absent in the lives of those resilient persons in her studies, when she was startled from her usual researcherly distance. For she had thought wholehearted lives would be akin to her own, characterized by hard work, following the rules, raising kids by the books, always seeking improvement, doing until gotten right. And under the do column, she did gather things she knew herself to value: worthiness, rest, play, trust, faith, intuition, hope, authenticity, love, belonging, joy, gratitude, creativity. But then she looked at what she had gathered under the don't column. Those things wholehearted people knew got in the way of resilient living, and she realized how much her own life fit under its thematic contours. Perfection, numbing, certainty, exhaustion, self-sufficiency, being cool, fitting in, judgment, and scarcity. All Brown's years of scientifically accumulating knowledge seemed to dissolve under a simple truth that she was astonished to find astonished her. To live wholeheartedly, to live with an acquired resilience to shame and fear, required that she first love herself in all of her imperfection. It required that she courageously desist from pleasing, performing, and perfecting, that she compassionately embrace her own vulnerability, and that she spend much more time owning her messy, imperfect, but unique story in connection with others. Brown realized that the skills of courage, of compassion, and of connection that equip us for wholehearted living are the gifts we receive from living our gloriously imperfect lives openly. It is only by delving into the very vulnerabilities and imperfections that provoke our shame and fear that we get access to those gifts that help cultivate resilience and belonging. Ironies abound in courage, compassion, and connection. To know what Brown means by courage, we have to look beyond the connotation the word has for many of heroic deeds of daring. For at the root of courage is cor, Latin for heart. To enact courage is therefore, for Brown, to speak one's mind by telling all one's heart. So the irony of putting courage into play is that it requires not putting on a shield of protective armor, but instead speaking honestly and honestly, openly and honestly about who we are, what and how we feel, and the experiences we have, the good and the bad. Courage requires giving up control in the service of authenticity. Sociologist Martha Beck, about whom I spoke in my sermon on accessing stillness a while back, reminds us that there are many ways to be in control, some of which may not at first sight look the part. For instance, people-pleasing, which at its heart is a controlling mechanism that forces out any possibility of discovering that others might not like us. Or achieving nonstop spectacular success, a strategy of hoping to exist as an impenetrably brilliant resume. Unfortunately, the result of both of these control gambits is a steady diet of risk-free love. Perhaps you know other ways of exerting control, of keeping the authentic you under wraps, withholding information, righteous indignation, helplessness, seductiveness, indifference, lying. But doesn't telling all one's heart, courage properly defined, virtually guarantee that we can be hurt? Beck has an answer. It doesn't virtually guarantee it, it absolutely guarantees it. But without courage, we can never really be known, never be loved unconditionally. Courage is not for the faint of heart, it is for the full of heart. Wholehearted living demands that we take risks. It also requires that we manage those risks. Compassion is Brown's second gift of imperfection. Compassion is a compound of Latin's pati and com, so to suffer with. Yet compassion is hardly a default response to suffering. Shaming and blaming come far more easily. At the heart of compassion is acceptance. And it has to begin with ourselves before it can be extended to others and before it can be received from others. The better we are at self-acceptance in all of our imperfections, the more compassionate we become and the more likely we will be able to show compassion for others. In The Places That Scare You, American Buddhist nun Pema Chodron writes, compassion practice is daring. It involves learning to relax and allowing ourselves to move gently toward what scares us. Compassion is not a relationship between the healer and the wounded.
It's a relationship between equals. Compassion becomes real when we recognize our shared humanity. The irony in putting compassion into play is that first we must set personal boundaries and hold others accountable for their behavior. For compassion does not mean accepting people who are hurting or taking advantage of us. The key is to separate people from their behavior. When we set appropriate boundaries, we prevent ourselves from being used and mistreated, and we free ourselves from reacting quickly, blaming the person, who they are, rather than addressing behaviors done and choices made. Where there is resentment, there cannot be compassion. And without courage and compassion, Brown writes, there can be no wholehearted connection. Brown defines connection as the energy that exists between people when they feel seen, heard, and valued, when they can give and receive without judgment, and when they derive sustenance and strength from the relationship. Connection is not a luxury item. Lives depend on it. I recently picked up a new book by psychiatrist Kelly Harding titled The Rabbit Effect: Live Longer, Happier, and Healthier with the Groundbreaking Science of Kindness. In it, she reveals that in 2016, the United States ranked 43rd in the world for life expectancy. 43rd. What's missing? It turns out, connection. The book's title refers to a 1978 cholesterol study where researchers fed groups of rabbits a very high fat diet in order to test the relationship to heart disease. The rabbits did indeed develop a panoply of heart disorders, except for one group of rabbits who were under the care of a researcher who cuddled and talked to the rabbits as they were being fed. The experiment was then replicated, specifically selecting for loving care, and the results were identical. The rabbit effect suggests what many studies since have demonstrated. Our interconnections not only help us to stay healthier, they contribute to our longevity and our access to joy. And yet there is an irony in putting connection into play. Just as courage requires vulnerability and compassion requires boundaries, wholehearted connection requires an acknowledgement of need. Until we can receive with an open heart, we are never really giving with an open heart. Brown writes that she finally understood that she was deriving self-worth from never needing help but always providing it, when her own world fell apart and she had no practice in accepting support. Connection is the energy that travels between people, and it's by necessity a two-way street if it's to be wholehearted. The three gifts that Brown brings to our attention, courage, compassion, and connection, on their surface appear rather easy to achieve, and facsimiles of all three are possible if we maintain careful control over our lives, parceling ourselves out in small boxes. In fact, however, all three are deeply unsettling, for at their heart is the uncomfortable reality that each of us is imperfect, likely in any number of ways. At the heart of what we do as an intentional congregation of care, however, is to create a space where each one of us has deep value, where we are enough, where we belong, where we are loved because of who we are, not in spite of it. We can fill one another's buckets. We can walk together as if in velvet shoes on newly fallen snow. We are blessed in our meeting. Now understand, I know only too well the toil of tending to my immaculate garden. Achieving and people-pleasing have taken their toll. And living into my own imperfections has definitely been an acquired taste. My call to ministry emerged from entering into a new openness, a new vulnerability, a new sense of boundaried accountability, a new willingness to be in need. Even now, something fragile deep within me resonates in profound ways with a concept like wabi-sabi, that there could possibly be beauty in imperfection, runs counter to much of what I've striven for in my life. Yet I know, and each day alongside you, I know it more deeply, in more ways, that if I can embrace a willingness to tell my own story, to open my heart to my own pain and that of others, and to stay in two-way, kind connection with a community of care, I too can embrace the gifts of imperfection, courage, compassion, and connection. And I, like you, can know again and again that our imperfections are not inadequacies, but rather the universe reminding each of us that we are wondrously, gloriously, beautifully imperfect together.